We're glad you're here. This is out of Proverbs, the 4th chapter. Solomon, of course, writing when he says, "Hear ye children the instruction of a father, and attend to no understanding. For I give you good doctrine. Forsake you not my law. For I was my father's son," and you know his daddy was David, "tender and only beloved in the sight of my mother." He had a good home. He had a good upbringing. Everything working in his favor. "He taught me also and said unto me, let thine heart retain my words, keep my commandments, and live." Retain and keep and live. That's a pretty good challenge, isn't it? Get wisdom. Get understanding. "Forget it not, neither decline from the words of my mouth. Forsake her not," that's wisdom, "and she shall preserve thee. Love her, and she shall keep thee." Well, keep me from what? Keep you from worlds of hurt and harm. Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. And with all thy getting, get understanding. Exalt her, and she shall promote thee. She shall bring thee to honor when thou dost embrace her. She shall give to thine head an ornament of grace. Wise people, you have found, are gracious people. If they are not gracious, then whatever they have is not wisdom. It's something maybe masquerading as that, but it is not wisdom, because wise people are given an ornament of grace by God. "A crown of glory shall she deliver to thee. Hear, O my son, and receive my sayings, and the years of thy life shall be many. I have taught thee in the way of wisdom. I have led thee in right paths." Well, you know Solomon, and you know that he's the son of David, and that, he had a lot of good things going for him. He was selected of all David's sons, of course, anointed to be the king to succeed David, and for that Solomon was not puffing out his chest, he was humbled. That tends to be the way it is with leaders that would really, maybe if you prefer someone else to do the leading. They are hesitant. They know their own inabilities, which to them seem to be a very apparent thing. And to Solomon, he was a good guy, and he was a smart guy, and he was now a rich guy, and all of that. And so in Gibeon, this is in 1 Kings chapter 3 in verse 5, the Lord appeared to Solomon in a dream. So Solomon had this dream, and God said, "Ask what I shall give thee." What do you want? You're going to rule Israel. What do you want? And Solomon said, "Thou hast shewed unto thy servant David, my father, great mercy, according as he walked before thee in truth and in righteousness and in uprightness of heart with thee. And thou hast kept for him this great kindness, that thou hast given him a son to sit on his throne as it is this day. And now, O Lord my God, thou hast made thy servant king instead of David my father, and I am but a little child. I know not how to go out. I don't know how to come in. And thy servant is in the midst of thy people, which thou hast chosen, a great people that cannot be numbered nor counted for a multitude." And so here's what he asked for, and you already know what he asked for because you've been hanging around church for a while. "Give therefore thy servant an understanding heart, to judge thy people, that I may discern between good and bad, for who is able to judge this thy so great a people?" And the speech, the thing that he requested of God in this dream, that pleased the Lord. You're not surprised that that pleased him, are you? That Solomon had asked this thing, and God said unto him, "Because thou hast asked for this thing, and has not asked for." Here's three things he didn't ask for. I check my prayer life. I don't want to be asking for these three things. You're not asked for a long life. He's not asked for riches for himself. He's not asked for the life of his enemies. I wouldn't recommend that any of you ask for those things. God has a plan for all of us, and that plan will unfold on his time frame and not on ours. So let's think about when we ask things of God, let's think about what things that we might ask of God that will really make Him happy, that will show to Him that we understand some things about life in this world and the kind of people that You've called us to be. "Behold, I have done according to Thy words," the Lord said to Solomon in verse 12, "I have given thee a wise and an understanding heart, so that there was none like thee before thee, neither after thee shall any arise that can compare. in the fourth chapter, verse 29, "And God gave Solomon wisdom and understanding exceeding much, and largeness of heart, even as the sand that is on the seashore." You talk about people that have a big heart. Solomon had a big heart. God gave him a big heart along with this wisdom, and Solomon's wisdom excelled the wisdom of all the children out of the east country and all the wisdom of Egypt, and he mentioned some other places and some things that he had done because he asked God for wisdom. James said in James chapter 1, if you recall, right at the very beginning of his epistle, "If any of you lack wisdom..." As you look back over your life and you reflect about decisions that you've made and how some of those were obviously blessed by God and some of those, you know, you wish you could bring them back and do them all over again. And if you lack wisdom, let him ask of God, who giveth to all men liberally, and he does not upbraid you, he does not correct you, he does not chastise you for asking for this. Well, that is entirely consistent with the will of God. So he says, get it. You know, Solomon said, in all of you getting, get some wisdom. And he doesn't say pursue wisdom. He says, actually get it. Lay your hands on it. It's something that's evidently available to us if we will simply get it. It just reach out, he says, and take that wisdom for what it is. And it's not hiding from us in any respect or in any way. And as you know, you go a little further in the book of Proverbs, through the 8th Proverbs chapter that he has written. And he asks these questions about that wisdom. "Doth not wisdom cry?" I mean, a loud voice. "And understanding put forth her voice?" I mean, wisdom is not hiding. You don't have to call it on in, you know. "She standeth at the top of high places," up there on the hill where her voice will echo through the valleys. "She standeth at the top of high places, by the way of the places of the paths, where people are constantly going and coming. She crieth at the gates, at the entrance of the city, at the coming in of the doors." And not hard to find. Not hard to find. If you simply go looking, if you simply listen, "Oh, you simple, understand wisdom, and you fools, be ye of an understanding heart, hear. For I will speak of excellent things, and the opening of my lips shall be right things." And so he did. He does. And he reminded of verse 11, "Wisdom is better than rich rubies, and all the things that may be desired are not to be compared to the wisdom that God will give you, because it will be a source of blessing for you throughout the rest of time and even into eternity." Ask for it. Pray for it. A lot of the things that are on our prayer list might need to take a back seat to the things that God tells us will really add quality to our lives and to the lives of those around about us. So get wisdom, he says. All right, well, who is wise? Out of all the people here this morning, out of all the people that you know, out of all the people in this world, who is really wise? Do we have to go to some mountain somewhere, to some guru that's been reclusive from humanity and travel up there to try and see what he knows that we need to know? No, you don't need to do that. Now, wisdom's in the streets. Wisdom sits in the public places where everybody passes by. And wisdom hollers at you as you're walking by. Say, "Hey, you know, here I am." So we need to understand those things out of the Scripture about wisdom. So who is wise? That's not the, you know, I'm not the first to ask that, and neither are you. James asked the question in James chapter 3, if you'll recall. Who is a wise man and a dude with knowledge among you? That's a reasonable question to ask people who are actually looking for wisdom and hoping to find wisdom and praying and asking God for wisdom. Who is wise? What does he look like? Or what does she look like? What age do they have to be? Well, the ages of no matter. It's not a criteria. Do they have to be men? No, don't have to be men. They can be women, men. They can be young people even. They can have a gracious amount of wisdom and have a head that is anointed by the grace of God. What do they look like? They look like you. They like me. Just like people. Wise people. So James says, you know, who is wise and endued with knowledge among you? And he said concerning this person, let him show something. There's something that would be evident in your life. Let him shew out of a good conversation, that's King James language, let him show in the way you live your life. It's easily recognizable in the life of any person that is wise. Let him show his works with meekness of wisdom. Not just show our works. When you say, oh, they're good, somebody ought to be looking at them. Well, good, okay. Do good things. But the attitude that you take in showing those to other people, let this be with meekness, he says. With meekness of wisdom. Well, what is that? What does that look like? If I'm showing, evidencing my wisdom through meekness, what does that look like that I'm doing? Well, you know, again, look to Jesus. He's our pattern and example in everything that we need to grow in and learn and develop. And Jesus said that we could all come unto Him, those that are labor and heavy laden, and He would give us rest. And take my yoke upon you, Matthew chapter 11, He said, for I am meek. There you go. So as you look at how Jesus lived His life and all the good that He did, all of that good that He did was evidence of His meekness. The Greek word actually means humility. But it's also a submissiveness. The humility is evidenced in the fact that the people that are meek will wind up doing stuff that they don't want to do. When the Scriptures speak of Moses, as it does, of being the meekest man in all the world, well, what was there about Moses that was meek? He was pretty brash, you know, when he went into Pharaoh. He didn't want to go. And he said, Lord, you know, somebody else. I'm just a shepherd. I can't speak. I'm not a professional. But he went. That's meekness. Wise people will do the things that they may not even want to do because they know they are the right thing to do. Jesus evidenced that meekness and the wisdom that he displayed all over. Who then is wise, he says? Who's a wise farmer? Well, a guy that farms for a living is a wise farmer is going to know his crop. He's going to know exactly what he's going to plant because he believes in what he's doing and what he can produce. And so he plants the right kind of seed and he knows some stuff about his ground and what might be lacking in it. And so he fixes the ground up so that it'll receive the seed. And he gets the weeds out of that thing. He works it and works it and works it. He fertilizes and does all those things at the right time in the right amount. He knows when to harvest, and so he harvests at just the right time to get the greatest yield, and he does that at the time when the market price is right. And who is a wise farmer among you? He knows all this stuff, and he makes the best application of the knowledge that he has in order to evidence that he's a good farmer. Who is a good Christian? He or she does a lot of stuff. And what they do at the right time. And they do it in the right way. Because they have learned. They have understanding about how to live with people and how to work with people and how to accomplish the Lord's will in their own lives and in the lives of their family. So that guy is wise. Here's the way James continued with that, and I'm about through with the message this morning. He said, who is a wise man and endued with knowledge among you? Let him show out of a good conversation, this is his lifestyle, his works with meekness of wisdom. But if you have bitter envying and strife in your hearts, are you acquainted with any of that kind of stuff? If you have that kind of stuff in your hearts, glory not and lie not against the truth. This wisdom, now there is a wisdom in that, but it's not God's wisdom. It's the wisdom of the world. This wisdom descendeth not from above, but is earthly, sensual, devilish. For where envying and strife is, there is confusion in every evil work. Why do we have a peaceful church? Why have we gone all of these years, decade after decade after decade, and had no splits? No big fusses where, you know. Why is that true? Because there is no envy here. We're not jealous one of another. We're not at each other over little trivial things that don't matter in the sight of God or anybody else. We're not people given to strife. Where those things exist, that's where there's confusion. Division and strife. But here's the wisdom that is from above. Verse 17. That wisdom that is from above is first pure. Before it's any of these other things, it is first pure. There's no false intentions, false motivations. A wise person is exactly whom he represents himself to be, or she represents herself to be. They have no masks to wear before anybody. Nothing is put on. It's first pure. That means it's based on truth. So this wisdom is based upon the truth of God and the truth of human character. Then it's peaceable. We're not at war with each other. We're not at war with our neighbors next door. We're not at war with our own family. Husbands are not at war with their wives, or wives with their husbands. It's gentle. When an occasional conflict does come up and one holds to one opinion and another holds to another opinion, what do we do with that? We're gentle with each other. It's easy to be entreated. Easy to be entreated. It's full of mercy and good fruits. It is without partiality, favoring one above another, and it is without, absolutely without hypocrisy. That is the wisdom that Solomon has spoken to us about when he said, get wisdom. Let's keep after it. I don't have as much of that as I need, or as much of that as I want, but I'm going to keep on trying to get it. You do the same. We're through with the message this morning. This is the opportunity that we have, you have, if you're here and not a Christian, to come in obedience to the gospel and repentance of sin and confession of your faith. We'll baptize you this morning into Christ. Or if you need our prayers, we stand ready to assist with that as well. You come while we stand and sing.